Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the May 13th edition of Commodity Week. Well, the economy may be teetering. USDA has released a less-than-friendly supply and demand report. Planters in the east are stuck. Acres in the south are underwater. Texas is bone dry. China may have bought corn, and oh, it's trying to slow down its economy again. Sounds fun. We'll find out what it all means for row crop commodities on today's edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Mark Deitch of LaSalle Futures Group. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's start our discussion today with this question. The United States Department of Agriculture raised the old crop corn ending stocks from 675 to 730 million bushels this week. The market was not happy. Is it finished dealing with that number yet, Aaron Curtis?
I don't think so yet. I think we still have some question marks out there. We did see them lower exports here on Wednesday morning. You know, we still got some work to do as far as meeting our sales goal. Export inspections still have a long way to go to meet that goal by the 1st of September. You know, some of the weekly ethanol numbers we continue to see running below what they need to average to get to that 5 billion bushel mark. I still think we still could see some tweaking of that, although, you know, a 730 to 775, whatever the number turns out to be, you know, still historically tight. So I don't know in the big picture if it's going to mean a whole lot.
Jackie Vakes?
I agree with Aaron from the standpoint that I don't think that they're done working on it yet either. And on top of that, we certainly can see the impact that the U.S. dollar and the dollar moving higher has had. Concerns about the European economy. And so when you look at a higher carryout number and then you start to look at concerns about inflation over there, it isn't just a matter of dealing with the number of stocks that we've got. It's a matter of dealing with whether the people who buy our stocks have enough money to actually buy it. So I think there's lots to be done yet in this market.
And Pete Manhart.
Well, I think after that report, when we dropped corn down to that new lows for the year, that there was all kinds of frenzy to buy by the rest of the world. And so I think the sales next week will give us a little clue whether that 30-cent drop helped sell a lot more. There were rumors all this week of all kinds of people buying corn. So I think it's not over yet either. I think that drop will make a lot of sales. That if China buys, all of a sudden that 30, 40 million could be gone in the old crop right away.
From the CME Group in Chicago, this is the way the corn futures ended the week. Remember, we give you the day, overnight trade, electronic, and open outcry all in one fell swoop. And then the change from Friday to Friday, May corn 720 and three quarters, the high, the low on the week at 659 and a quarter. May corn settled $6.79, a loss down 3 3/4 of a cent before the week. And December futures at $6.27. 13 and a quarter cents lower. You know, that may down 3.75%, that's just kind of an amazing number because you would have thought it was much greater than that.
Yeah, we've had some big moves. I think, we have four of our sessions this week had a wider than a 20-cent range this week. This was the quietest day we had, and we still had a 15-cent range. So obviously volatility continues to work in this market, and it's just going to get worse here as we move into the summer months.
There's a lot of volatility, and I have this one question to ask on the corn market. Are we in the weather market now?
Oh, sure. We've been in it for a while. A week ago, all kind of people were saying we wouldn't get anything planted. And now for next week, Monday's number, they're looking at over 60% planted. If you look at Iowa, a week ago went from 8 to 69 in 1 week. Illinois is going to show huge improvement, everything west. We will also see improvement in lots of parts of Ohio and Indiana.
Let me rephrase it just a little bit. Are we in a weather market now? And the question is whether we have really switched to new crop as opposed to dealing with what we talked about up front, the old crop.
Yeah, I think we're in the new crop most of the time. I think the old crop's still in the back of people's minds because of what new sales will be in old crop.
I don't know. Wet weather just never feels quite like a weather market like dry weather can. So, right. You know, we go through these crop years every year, and we wonder whether or not we get planted. And, you know, I haven't been in the business maybe as long as Jackie or Pete have, but as far as I remember, we've always got some sort of a corn crop planted. So I don't really continue to see much of a weather market, even though we have had some moves affected by the weather. I think the summer months is really where things are going to start to heat up.
Well, and I think on top of that, you know, we have a tendency always to focus on everything we're comfortable with. Weather market's something we're comfortable talking about. What about talking about all the things that impact this market today that didn't impact this market, let's say, 5 years ago? You know, and that's being the economies, the world, you know, the U.S. dollar, margin requirement changes, and heavy amounts of investment from other places. So I think the weather market's been put on the back seat in, you know, by a lot of the outside markets right now, especially this past week.
So turn your attention, and we'll kind of stay with new crop and the weather market yet to come. Do you think producers have done a good job this week in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and take them in that order in putting the rest of the crop in the ground?
I think they have in Illinois, except the places that are flooded. Indiana and Ohio have made good progress, but they still have some wet areas.
Right. And the guys that I've been talking to here in Illinois, we've certainly made really good progress in a lot of places. Indiana, not nearly as much in Ohio. I had the opportunity to talk to a couple clients, one 100 miles north of Columbus and 100 miles south of Columbus, and one of them has 5,000 acres. He was putting his first 30 acres in on Monday in sandy soil and sinking in 6 inches. So that is not that's not good, and that's pretty widespread over in the Ohio. I'd say Ohio River Valley has it the worst of any of us.
How much do you think at this point we've impacted national yield, not acres, but national yield?
I guess I don't think a whole lot yet. I know the USDA, you know, lowered the trend line yield down 3 bushels an acre on Wednesday morning, factoring in some of this late planting. But, boy, we still make a crop in July and August, so I think we still have some potential here to have some pretty good crops.
Yeah, they're at 158.7 bushel the acre.
That's right. That was a 3 bushel drop, which I was kind of surprised to see. But, you know, we were talking before the show. The key still comes down to the weather. It isn't the number of acres you plant. It's the yield that you get. And the yield comes from the weather. We saw it last year. We were on track for a tremendous crop, and the weather took it away from us.
So we have a long ways to go yet.
A long way. And corn planted in 70-degree soil this week pops right up. Corn that was planted a month ago, 3 weeks ago, that is standing out there, that's lost its vigor, might not do as well as stuff planted this week.
And we still have not yet dealt, in this show at least, with what happens with the crop in the South. Some are saying as many as 3 million cropping acres, not just acres, but 3 million cropping acres, are underwater at this point from southern Illinois to New Orleans.
Yep.
And that will have an impact on the whole of the marketplace, and I would think at least the August and September time frame for the cash prices in Illinois, Iowa, and any place else that might be able to harvest corn. What happens?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, the USDA has told us here in the last couple of reports they're kind of counting on some of that early corn and also some of this winter wheat in, you know, the Carolinas and Arkansas. And, you know, some of that's going to be affected, too, with some of this wet weather. Also, because we know as we get into the flowering stage, we don't necessarily like an excessive amount of water on some of that winter wheat. We'll see what happens with The spillways down in Louisiana here. They're supposed to make a decision maybe as early as this weekend whether or not they have to open up some of them spillways to kind of relieve the pressure on New Orleans. So it's going to have an impact here as we get into August and 1st of September when we typically count on some of those early bushels, especially in a tight year like this.
You know, I talked to a number of our clients down in Louisiana and just exactly about this, and some of them have the opinion that more rice acres are going to be affected than any of the row crops are. So, you know, it's a hard question. Coming out of Illinois, I'm sure it's going to be row crops. But the reality is you know, the wheat yields normally tend to lead the way for the South, you know, out of Texas. And, boy, if their wheat situation is as bad as they say it is, their corn situation is not going to be very good for early crop either.
Well, it could mean, I don't know. What does it mean for here in the Midwest? Does that mean, for instance, that the Hereford specials start up as fast as they can out of the northern part of the state?
I really think that usually when you have super wet weather like this, it's like 93. No one knows about it until very late in the year, and there will be all kind of speculation on both sides. But I think we really won't know until late in the year.
All right, well, we'll speculate with the crop until it comes in at that point. Soy complex bean futures may contract at $13.52 and a quarter high for the week, a low at $13.19. Settlement price there, $13.37, finished 12 cents lower. November beans at $13.10 and three quarters of a cent were up 2 1/4 cents from the previous week. Did the WASD numbers in the beans at all surprise you? There weren't all that many changes that took place, although they now have a 160 ending stocks number for next year.
Yeah, I think it just kind of reminds us that things are going to get, you know, fairly tight here as we move into next year. Really not expecting much change. Of course, we're seeing a big swing to corn acres. So as that moves into next fall and next marketing year, now we're going to flip-flop that a little bit probably and have to find some bean acres next year. You know, lowered exports by 30 million. I think that's not necessarily a big surprise with some of the cancellations of forward purchases that we've seen move forward by China moving forward. And you can see it this week. We saw corn futures recover with some of the demand we saw with South Korea and unknown destinations, I guess, this morning, buying some grain on some of this dip. So we just haven't seen the same in soybeans, and we saw them futures suffer today anyway.
After every WASD report, the World Agricultural and Supply and Demand Estimates, the question is, did we find rationing? I suppose we can say that happened for corn and for soybeans because they raised both of those numbers for ending stocks.
Well, they raised ending stocks and they lowered exports, so you would have to say that the rationing is, if there's any, it's starting right where we thought it would, and one of the only areas that actually is open to it right now, and that's the export market. But, you know, when you look at the bean market, it's, you know, there's a lot of focus, of course, on South America, and you can see why they're nervous. I saw for the first time in over a year when we had inspections, and China mainland did not take one single bushel 2 weeks ago. This week they were back taking beans again, but that's the first time. So there's a lot to say whether or not we reached a level in the bean market that's not comfortable for them.
Yeah, and when you look at the ending stocks are still very tight, so we need good crops from everywhere in the world. And that's true of beans and corn. But right now, the economic news from China, they're trying to slow things down. They're trying to do this, that, and the other. And they're also buying all their beans, or most of them right now, from South America. Last year, all summer, they were mad at Argentina and continued to buy from us clear into the middle of the summer.
No, we have dealt. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's going to be really interesting when you talk about one of the reasons China had gone away from South America a little bit was because they were considered unreliable when Argentina went on strike and did everything else. Now Argentina delisted Bunge, and Bunge, from what I understand, is trying very hard to get all of their people they bought from to deliver to the port rather than to them to try and go around the government. But what happens to their reliability if all of a sudden they can't actually get it out of the port and out there? So that's a big question.
We spent a lot of time dealing with fundamentals, dealing with the corn and the soybean crop particularly, but this week it was really outside markets that had as much of an impact on those marketplaces as anything. Many in the outside market fearful that it's teetering just a bit again. There's not always that much good news in it. How much of an impact did it have on the weekly trade?
I still think it has quite a bit. I mean, we've seen some pretty good swings in crude oil. And, you know, even this week, you look at a corn chart and put it next to a crude oil chart as far as just this week, and you can see a lot of similarity. Of course, the bigger question I guess most of us asking is, why hasn't our gas prices come down? So maybe Jackie has the answer.
But, you know, if you look at the money that the funds have in the last couple of weeks, one in three fund managers supposedly have said, get me out. I want to get smaller. And that has had more of an effect than anything we've talked about so far in pushing crude down, pushing corn down, pushing beans down, pushing everything down. And those outside factors, plus worrying about China and their economy, worrying about the rest of the world and that economy, who's going to buy it from us? And that has been, with the funds especially getting out of some of their length, a big problem.
Yeah, and I think when you roll back and you look at what really started it all, it was when the European Central Bank said that they weren't going to change the interest rates. And that scared investors to thinking that maybe things aren't nearly as good over there in Europe as what they thought they were. And the minute that that starts, it starts a, you know, we have so many mechanisms in the market now, such as fund trading groups, or I mean trend trading groups. We've got black boxes that pull the trigger if it gets to a certain level, if this happens. So there's a lot of things that can trigger a lot of other things happening in the market. And then you have what we commonly call margin liquidation. People are in it, they can't meet their margins, they jump out, and that's just basically what happens.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is the March 13th edition. We'll be back in 2 minutes when we talk with Mark Deitch of LaSalle Futures Group.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Much warmer and drier weather this week allowed acceleration in planting activities across the state. Temperatures averaged 8 to 10 degrees above normal this week, with highs in the 90s in many locations on Tuesday. Dew points climbed into the upper 60s, and it felt more like mid-July than mid-May across much of the state. The warm weather, accompanied by generally breezy conditions, helped dry out fields, and planters were rolling across much of Illinois. Precipitation was scattered throughout Illinois this week. Heavy thunderstorms Wednesday afternoon and evening dumped more than 2 inches of rain on portions of Kane County, but for the most part, precipitation this week was less than a half inch through Thursday. A slow-moving upper-level low-pressure system will swing through the Midwest and Illinois this weekend and Monday. That will keep alive the chances for showers and thunderstorms through at least Monday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms could linger in eastern Illinois on Tuesday, but after that, the remainder of the week should be dry as high pressure takes over. Temperatures will be closer to normal this weekend into the first half of the week and could be well below normal in northeastern Illinois. As skies clear out toward midweek, there could be some chilly mornings with temperatures in the 30s in northern Illinois and in the 40s elsewhere. Temperatures on the whole next week will likely average near to below normal across much of the state. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the March 13th edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio with us include Aaron Curtis. He's with Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois. And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line, Mark Deitch of LaSalle Futures Group. And Mark began his career in 1996 with Consolidated Grain and Barge, where he learned, he says, the essentials of cash grain merchandising at a river elevator in southern Illinois. And then he moved to Mandeville, Louisiana to trade the export grain market. He was named their trading manager for all commodities in 2006. In addition to the cash and futures trading, he focused much of his time on risk management, logistics, customer service, training, and world supply and demand analysis. In 2007, Mark moved to Chicago to work with the LaSalle Futures Group and become a trader there, an analyst, focusing on work in the soybean and soybean meal markets. Oh, and one other note, Mark has a master's in Ag Econ from the University of Illinois. Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You've had a very nice career so far. What have you learned over that career that helped you trade better this week?
Well, I tell you what, there's times when you feel like everything you've learned is just changing right before your eyes. But these markets are certainly testing everybody's everything everybody's learned throughout the years. But I think, you know, in the end, we learned that we just need to focus on the fundamentals and what's going on, and that's probably going to ultimately move these markets. Although nowadays we do have to pay a lot more attention to the to the outside markets. What's crude oil doing? What's the dollar doing? It's all the markets are really in a time of transition, it seems like to me, and we all have to look at markets a little bit differently than we did in the past. But in the end, you know, it's going to be the fundamentals that ultimately drive the price. But how we get there is definitely changing.
Pick your favorite row crop at the moment and tell me about the fundamentals that you view in that marketplace.
Well, normally I would pick soybeans because that's kind of my the area that I focus more on. But right now I got to pick corn just because it seems like corn has a little bit more going on in terms of what's driving it right now. And we've got, as you guys talked about earlier, we've got a very compelling old crop story that maybe is not getting a little bit less compelling. But the interesting thing to me now is that we've got we've got the new crop, and we've got potentially as many as 3 million acres underwater in the south. We've got potentially maybe over 1 million acres in the Dakotas that could be impacted by flooding, and we've got the far eastern Corn Belt that could be in trouble. So all of that kind of makes us question what the acreage is going to be this year. And obviously, we've talked all along that we need to have maximum acreage, and if we don't get that, then what happens? So I think the corn market is there's a lot going on, and we don't know how it's all going to be solved, but the corn market intrigues me the most at this time.
Well, Mark, this is Aaron. I did have a question about that volatility you talked about and all the things that are going on in the corn market. What is your take, then, on the CME's proposal to raise the corn limits?
Well, you know, you can take two different ways of looking at that. One, you could say that it may just invite more speculation and more volatility. But in the end, with the synthetics trading and we end up trading up more than 30-cent limits through synthetic markets anyway. So my bias is that 40 cents, given what is going on right now and just all the uncertainty, 40 cents maybe makes a little more sense. It wasn't just maybe 10 years ago when limits were only about 12 cents. So I think you have to adapt to the market a little bit and maybe expand the limits a little bit. It does maybe make it a little bit more like a casino, which scares me a little bit. But I think that it's a necessary evil at this time.
Well, you know, Mark, every day you have people who call up and are frustrated by what's going on. You know, they say speculators shouldn't be a part of the market. They don't belong in this business. Can you give us a couple good reasons why you see them being there or not being there and how they affect the market?
Well, I think the traditional role of speculators, it is an important role in that if the farmer wants to sell grain and the end user doesn't want to buy grain, they're there to provide a bid. And when the end user wants to buy and the farmer doesn't want to sell, they're there to provide an offer. Now, it does seem as if our markets have become much more correlated to the outside markets, and it may seem like maybe that function isn't being maybe it's not as valuable as it is in theory. But I still think that we would find out very quickly if we took speculators completely out of the market that farmers might not like it if there wasn't a bid for their grain as they were harvesting it.
Peter, you talked about coming back to fundamentals eventually. Have any kind of an idea of how soon we will get back to that? Will this be based on weather and growing conditions, or is there any time frame out there where you look to see fundamentals actually coming into play more?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I actually I was talking to a few people. It wasn't last week, and you know, I said these markets have become so difficult, I don't even know how to look at them anymore. They looked at me and said, "Well, this is just like 2008 all over again." And in a lot of ways, it is. We had the big spike up in 2008, and then a big hard pull down. And it seems like after that, after we got kind of the market acclimated to the new paradigms, we went back to fundamentals. And I guess I think that we're going to have to go through some more of this again, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's just like this week when we saw futures come down hard based on outside markets. Well, we did see the fundamentals react, especially in the corn. We saw the cash markets react. Cash markets found some buyers. They went to the world buyers in Japan and Korea and maybe even China, decided that the price was attractive, and they stepped in. And in a way, I guess you could say that fundamentals worked. The futures market then bounced, and it seems like it bounced. One could argue that it bounced because of the outside markets. I'd make the argument that the reason we were bounced later in the week was that we uncovered some buying.
Do you think that this time around, unlike the last time in 08, that the commercial purchaser is in good enough shape, and they proved it this week, to manage to have cash lead the marketplace even if the outside fundamentals would start to turn sharply lower?
Well, and that's a good question. I think a lot of consumers and users would lose a lot of faith in their market because a lot of them have covered fairly far in advance because they saw the fundamentals as being pretty compelling and pretty scary to them as end users. And if we saw some kind of a collapse and they're already covered, I think they'd be pretty frustrated. But it does seem like the guys that we talked to have in general, they seem to be better prepared financially for such a thing just because they've been through it before.
Mark, talk a little bit about your read on what China's been doing, even this year, on trying to slow down inflation. And do you see any real impact on bean demand moving forward?
Well, I think that their soybean demand has slowed down maybe as much because of some of the livestock diseases that they've had that have lowered their livestock numbers as it does with the attempts of the government. Now, the government has raised interest rates several times, and they're trying to slow the economy down, and they've also released about 3 million tons of government-owned stocks that they've had in store for a couple of years now. So there have been things that have slowed down their imports and also maybe some outside factors that have slowed down their soybean demand. Longer term, I'm not quite sure. I'm unconvinced that it's going to have any big impact longer term simply because of their population growth and their movement to the city. And I've learned over the last 10 years it's been a tough bet against China. It seems like every time we think they're going to slow down, they just keep cranking. I do think that their soybean imports are in the process of slowing down right now, and it's going to continue that way for a while, but longer term, I think that they're going to continue to grow.
One final and fairly quick and short question. In the USDA's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate for the coming crop marketing year, they predicted that prices at the cash market will stay extremely high. Do you agree with that?
You mean the futures markets here?
No, I mean the cash markets. Their cash market prices were all
oh,
in
sure.
that.
Sure, yeah. No, I do think that in general the fundamentals are friendly, and I think that ultimately, as we found this week, when futures dip, we tend to find buyers, and that supports the cash market. So I guess in general, I feel that markets will stay fairly well supported.
Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mark Deitch is with LaSalle Futures Group. Now a final word from our panelists in studio, Aaron Curtis of Midco.
Well, Todd, I think we talked about it a little bit earlier here today. Be ready for some pretty good volatility. I don't think we've seen anything as far as what we're going to see this summer and as far as ranges that we're going to trade on today. So be prepared.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peters.
Well, I just wish all of you the best of luck at planting and stay safe because I know there's a lot of guys going all night long.
And Pete Manhart.
Yeah, stay safe out there finishing up and have some traps set ready to take advantage of higher prices when they do come.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.